Well, we're glad to have Brother Tom serving us today. And as you can see from the title, he has chosen Prisoners of Hope. Brother Tom.
Thank you, Brother Aaron. Brethren, it is a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to be here every fourth Sunday, but it's a special pleasure to be with you. This morning in convention, Sister Nancy and I bring the love and greetings of our ecclesia. Quite a few of our ecclesias here as well today, but we bring the love and greetings to you in this wonderful day of the Lord. The title, as presented, is Prisoners of Hope. Recently, our class was studying in the first volume, and the phrase Prisoners of Hope was mentioned, and it struck a number of thoughts in my mind due to various visits to Holocaust museums and a video clip of a survivor. Today, I would like to share some of those thoughts concerning the hope of Earth's prisoners. What does it mean to be a prisoner? A prisoner is one who is bound, tied, or restrained from the freedoms that they once had. Let's consider Joseph as an example of this definition. He was sold into slavery and served in Potiphar's house. Because of Potiphar's wife's failed desire, we read in Genesis 39, verse 20, and Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in prison. His freedom and authority as Potiphar's trusted servant were lost. And now Joseph was confined within the walls of a prison. The purpose of incarceration was to serve as a just sentence for failure to follow the laws of the land. By the decision of a judge, many men were imprisoned. And of those, some were confined for unjust reasons. When did Joseph lose his freedom? Was it in Egypt? Or was it when his older brothers sold him into slavery? Or was it when his brothers told Jacob of Joseph's death to Jacob, thinking that Joseph was dead? Was Joseph a prisoner just like Rachel? Or did Joseph become a prisoner at his birth? To find the answer, we must look at the point in time when there were no prisoners. When we consider Adam and Eve living in Eden, we see a kingdom type of freedom. We read in Genesis, the first chapter, so God created man in his own image. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it. And God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. As God is perfect, his creations were perfect. Adam and Eve had perfect life, and God's provision for them would have filled the earth with perfect children also having life. What was God's requirement for Adam to have this freedom? God said, and the Lord commanded the man, saying, you shall freely eat of every tree of the garden, but the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day you eat of it, you shall die. The requirement of God's law was simple. God provided many different trees to sustain life. There was only one tree which he and Eve could not eat. Obedience would allow perfect life to continue. Disobedience would result in the loss of freedom provided in Eden, and the life would be replaced with death. His dominion as an earthly kingdom would be replaced with imprisonment. A simple choice to have freedom? Yes. And to Adam he said, "Because you have eaten of the tree which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. You shall eat the plants of the field. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread until you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, you are dust, and to dust you shall return." Life choices have consequences. Eve was deceived, and Adam willfully disobeyed. Grief and fear filled their hearts. With their just sentence, the two faced a different life. Their peace and communion with God was replaced with a separation from God and a life of hardship and pain. As in Adam, all died. All of Adam's children, including Joseph, are prisoners of death. When the cherubims guarding the return to Eden, we see that paradise was lost. They were now, that is Adam and Eve, were now in the prison house of the unfinished earth, striving until death would end their lives. Every prisoner would like to hear some words of hope. The sentence justly or unjustly pronounced might end one day. And if they could only return to the freedom of their past. Before the gospel age message, God provided Adam and his children with a measure of hope. Beginning with Adam, we're told that Eve's seed would bruise Satan's head. For Noah, after the flood, God told him, "I will set my bow in the cloud. I will remember my covenant which is between you and me." After Abraham offered his promised son, he was given a precious promise. "I will indeed bless you, and I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore. And by your descendants shall all the nations of the earth bless themselves." Jacob, because of his fear of leaving home and joining Joseph in Egypt, sought this word from God. God said to Jacob, "I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will bring you up again." When Joseph was about to die, Joseph told the people, "But God will visit you and bring you out of this land, up to the land which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." Moses talked about a better mediator. David was told that his throne would last forever. Isaiah spoke of a highway, a special highway, in which the unclean shall not pass. Obadiah talked about saviors coming up upon Mount Zion to rule Mount Esau. And Malachi gave us the hope that I will send you Elijah the prophet. Let's return to Joseph for a moment and ask, what sustained Joseph while in Egypt? Joseph heard and believed the stories of his father, Jacob, his grandfather, Isaac, and his great-grandfather, Abraham. Joseph also believed in God's promises. This is important. Joseph must have had a hope that God would find some favor with him to bless others based upon these promises given to his forefathers. Yet Joseph was, to a degree, confined to service in Egypt. While in Potiphar's service, we are told, the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hands. Because of Joseph's faith, God blessed Joseph's works, and Joseph in turn was able to bless Potiphar. Being sold into slavery could have been a very negative experience, but Joseph's faith and his hope turned serving Potiphar into a positive period of growth. Again, we find Joseph's faith and hope continued to grow while in prison. We're told in Genesis 39, starting with verse 21, the Lord was with Joseph, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's care all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Even after interpreting the baker's and the butler's dreams and seeing them fulfilled, Joseph patiently waited in prison for 2 more years. Why? Until God's time was right for Joseph's next experience. Joseph was called upon to interpret the Pharaoh's dream about 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. He was placed in authority again to bless the Egyptians, but also he would bless his father and his brothers for a better reason than simply food. When Joseph revealed himself to his brothers, he said something that you would not think a brother who was sold into slavery would say. He told his brothers, "And God sent me before you to preserve you, a remnant on earth, and to keep you alive for you many survivors. For it is not you that set me here, but God." God had sent Joseph to Egypt. Can you imagine that realization when it came to Joseph's mind, being a prisoner, that it was God's plan for Joseph to go to Egypt, not only to bless the Egyptians, but to bless his father and also his brothers. Prior to Paul's conversion, he cast many Christians into prison. As a follower of Christ and his ambassador to both the Jews and more so to the Gentiles, Paul chose to be a prisoner for Christ, both figuratively and at times actually or literally. He desired to be confined to do one thing. With all his strength, Paul sought that object every day. Let's look at an example of this. Because of Paul casting the evil spirit out of Pithamus, Paul and Silas were beaten and locked into prison. What did Paul and Silas pray for? Did they pray to be freed? Or did they pray for service, to bless? As we read in Acts, the 16th chapter, starting with verse 25, we see a wonderful event unfolding. It was about midnight. Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the prisoners were listening to them. And suddenly, there was a great earthquake, so that the foundations of the prison were shaken, and immediately all the doors were opened, and everyone's fetters were unfastened. When the jailer awoke and saw that the prison doors were opened, he drew his sword and was about to kill himself, supposing that the prisoners had escaped. But Paul cried out with a loud voice, "Do not harm yourself, for we are all here." And he called for lights and rushed in, trembling with fear, and he fell down before Paul and Silas and brought them out and said, "Men, what must I do to be saved?" And they said, "Believe in the Lord Jesus, and you will be saved, you and your household." And he was baptized at once with all of his family. If Paul and Silas were praying for freedom, their story could have ended with them escaping. No concern for the freedom or consequences of the others. Yet we read about the events concerning the jailer. He was ready to take his own life rather than face the wrath of the rulers. Paul saved him by saying, "Do not harm yourself, for we are all here." That must have really been welcoming words to that jailer. The jailer's life was saved, right? Well, if this is true, then why did he ask Paul, "What must I do to be saved?" He was saved. Paul's words throughout the night were heard by the other prisoners, so they did not attempt to escape. The jailer must also have heard the singing, the message, and the prayers. These words and Paul's example as a prisoner must have touched the hearts of this Gentile to learn more about being freed from the prison house of death. The jailer's life was saved twice that night. Now we can see that Paul and Silas must have been praying for service and to be a blessing to others. Concerning hope, there are three perspectives. As the true church has one Lord, one faith, one baptism, and one God, they also have one hope. Their hope is to be found as faithful overcomers and be chosen to serve with Christ as his bride. For Israel, Paul mentions both the hope and the resurrection. In addition to life restored, their hope was the same as the hope of Joseph. Their hope is in the promise to Abraham to bless the world. For the Gentiles, Paul mentions, "You Gentiles, having no hope without God in the world." They did not know God, so they could not have a hope in a God. In Matthew, the 12th chapter, verses 18 and 21 refers back to Isaiah 42. But reading from Matthew 12, we are told, "Behold, my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved, I will put my spirit upon him, and he shall proclaim justice to the Gentiles. And in his name will the Gentiles hope." Without knowing God, the Gentiles waited for a just law. The hope of these three, in part, is part of one hope, which we'll see in a moment. I'd like to spend a little time reflecting upon the aspect of Israel and prisoners of hope. This key text is taken from Zechariah chapter 9, verses 11 and 12, which we'll read. "As for you also, because of the blood of my covenant with you, I will set your captives free from the prison, from the waterless pit. Return to your stronghold, O prisoners of hope. Today I declare that I will restore to you double." Israel's double has ended. But the hard experiences to draw them back to the promised land continued. As in times of old, many were led away again to captivity, still prisoners. Did the Jews lose hope after the fall of Jerusalem and the temple? From 70 AD to the 1930s, a majority of the Jews remained separated from their local communities, of their religious and their cultural practices. They, in various levels of belief, held strong to the hope, the promises given to and written by the prophets. When the doors were opened to return to Israel, some of the Jews returned to the promised land. However, some of them remained in the foreign lands because of old age or family or prosperity. In 1845, there were about 12,000 Jews living in Israel. Not a very large number, is it? By 1922, the number increased to 85,000. In 1931, during the early days of Europe's troubles, the number increased to 175,000. And by 1939, 450,000 Jews were in Israel. Yet millions of Jews remained in Europe at the beginning of World War II. About 6 million of those Jews died at the hands of others. Lost hope? Today, there are over 7.7 million Jews in Israel. Lost hope? I don't think so. For those Jews in Europe during World War II, did they lose hope? I want to read a quotation from a Jewish prisoner, Solomon Drogalski. And listen to these words. It's entitled, "Welcome to Your New Home." And you will see. Filled with dread and drained of all energy, we trudged across the soggy clay soil. We have reached our new graves, as we're referred to our new homes, before we have dragged ourselves to our new places, before we have barely had a chance to snatch a breath of air. Several of us had been clubbed over the head. Blood has already flowed from cut heads or battered faces. This is the housewarming for the new arrivals. We're all in a state of shock as we looked across at the place they had brought us to. They immediately informed us that this is a taste of life in the camp. Iron discipline prevails here. We are in a death camp. It is an island where nothing lives. People are not here to live. They are here to find death sooner or later. There is no room for life here. This is the residence of death. Life in the concentration camp was anything but life. For over 6,000 years, the Cains of this world have been persecuting and killing their brothers, the Abels of this earth. Books and pictures of the conditions and tales of the Holocaust provided a reminder of the evils of men. And sadly, genocide continues in parts of the world today. Yet, it is the survivors of these experiences telling their stories and sharing lessons which is a greater witness. Several months ago, there was a video clip about a woman named Alice. You may have seen it. Let me tell you a little bit about Alice. Alice Hertz was born in Prague in 1903 to Jewish parents. As young children, she and her brothers and sisters learned to play various musical instruments. By the time she was a teenager, Alice was a well-known pianist in Prague. When the Nazi forces invaded Czechoslovakia in 1939, many of Alice's family members and friends immigrated to Palestine via Romania. Alice remained in Prague to care for her sick mother. In 1942, her mother was killed, and by 1943, she, her husband, and her six-year-old son were transported to Terezin concentration camp. In 1945, she and others in Terezin were liberated by the Soviet Army. And the same year, she immigrated to Israel and taught music until 1986 when she joined her son in London. At the age of 104, she published a best-selling book titled A Garden of Eden in Hell. The book recalls the events of her life in the concentration camp. And last November, she turned 107. I'm going to play the video clip for you. And as she speaks, I would like for you to listen to some points. She talks about life in our music, and our music being life. She talks about comforting her son. She talks about her hope and her optimism. She talks about love and hatred. As you listen to her story, relate these same points to Joseph's experiences with his brothers, his imprisonment, and blessing others. And think of Paul's life as once hunting down Christians to his conversion and how he blessed others while being a prisoner. Why could these lessons be important for us to ponder? When 10 Gentiles grabbed hold the hem of a Jew, what should be the character, what should be that person of that Jew? Hoping, caring, loving, or troubled, gloomy, or hateful? Are we developing a sympathetic character? Have we learned to be merciful?
In this blog is having classical music beautifully played morning and afternoon. In fact, I know people who have been used to standing outside the building in the street listening to her and just admiring her playing. And she still plays every day.
To the residents of this small apartment building in North London, Alice Summer is simply the lady in number 6.
I've heard this music. I am not interested in anything else.
She has her health, her friends and her music. And at 106, she feels she's one of the luckiest people alive. Alice receives visitors every afternoon. People who come to hear her stories and maybe learn from her experience.
I love people. I love everyone. I love people. I love to speak. I'm interested in the life of other people.
Alice is the oldest Holocaust survivor in the world.
Beethoven. He is a miracle. His music is not only melody, what is inside. What is inside? How it's filled. It's full. It's intensive. Phenomenal.
In 1942, Alice was a well-known concert pianist living in Prague. At age 39, she was deported to a Nazi concentration camp. Theresienstadt was a purgatory for artists. Designed by the Nazis to deceive the international community, its purpose was to show the world how well the Jews of Europe were being treated by their Nazi captors. Under constant threat of extermination, starving prisoners were permitted to paint, to perform, and make music. For propaganda purposes, Theresienstadt was the only camp in which children were not taken from their parents. Alice had been deported with her little boy, Rafi.
I knew that we will play. And I was thinking, when we can play, it can't be so terrible. The music, the music.
Ah, here they are.
Oh,
so how is it going?
This is my very good Sunday friend. She comes every Sunday.
Alice's friends, Adinka and Anita, are also Holocaust survivors. And like Alice, music was essential to their survival in the camps.
But every day in life is beautiful. Every day. That we are here, we can speak about everything. What? It's beautiful.
In Theresienstadt, Alice gave more than 100 concerts, performing all of Chopin's etudes from memory.
That was my first time, actually, I have heard all Chopin's etudes. And I remember Alice sitting on the stage. I was in about third row and saw her from the right profile. And I was quite captivated. It was magic to hear this music in that kind of surrounding, which you don't realize until it's over. So you come sort of back to earth and see where you are and how much it was a moral support. It was not entertainment, as most people think, that we were having fun. It had a much bigger value.
Children's opera, Brundibar. Alice's undiminished optimism gave him strength, and he too survived.
We are sleeping on a mattress. He fed my body. When a child is near to the mother, everything can happen. He is not afraid. It gives him security. And I was always laughing. Even there I was laughing.
So the people who were sitting in the audience, we were transported into a different time. The time before when we lived in a normal civilized life, civilized world, and hoping and being convinced that the war will soon finish, we'll go back home and it will go. But of course, what we knew later, the Germans knew full well that we are sentenced to death and thought, let them play, let them laugh, the laughter will soon vanish from their face. And we were dancing under the gallows.
Sometimes it happens that I am thankful to have been there, because this gave me I am richer than other people. My reaction on life is quite another one. All complain, this is terrible, it's not so terrible.
Father always used to say the very wise words, put as much as you can into your heads, because that's something nobody can take away from you. And I think that is so very, very true. And I think this is where music comes in, the importance of music, because you can actually have music in your head without anybody knowing it is happening.
you can actually go into another world, which is a lot nicer than the world you're actually living in. I can say without hesitation that the shadow saved my life, because I knew what was going on in Auschwitz. So I arrived in Auschwitz really preparing to go in the gas chamber. I mean, that was Auschwitz, was gas chambers. Instead of that, when I arrived there, as a sort of ceremony, you know, people take your clothes off you and shave your head and tattoo a number on your arm. And this is all done by prisoners. And one of these said, what's going on? How long is the war going? Will it soon be over? You know, so then, what's your name and where do you come from? And what did you do before you were arrested? And like an idiot, I said, I used to play the cello. I mean, you know, really ridiculous thing to say. And she said, oh, fantastic, you'll be saved. So I became a member of this orchestra, which was a completely life-saving, because as long as they wanted music, they couldn't put us in the gas chamber. I mean, you know, there's a certain amount of logic in the Germans.
A lot of German journalists come and want to know, speak with me and so on. Before they enter my room, they ask, are we allowed to enter your room? Do you not hate us? So my answer is, I never hate, I will never hate. Hatred brings only hatred.
Alice Sommer has lived her life without hatred. Nourished by the unquenchable power of music, she remains a beacon of hope and inspiration to everyone who knows her.
I was born with a very, very good optimist. And this helps you. When you are optimistic, when you are not complaining, when you look at the good side of our life, everybody loves you. Only when we are so old, only we are aware of the beauty of life.
How long will the travail be of the prisoners? We're told that the whole creation has been groaning and travailing until now. We wait for our adoptions as sons. When our hope is fulfilled, and their hope will be realized. Who has the keys to this prison house? We're told, fear not, for I am the first and the last, and the living one. I died, and behold, I am alive again forevermore. I have the keys of death and Hades. Jesus is the true hope for all mankind. He, the Lamb of God, has the keys to release Adam and his children from the death judgment given in Eden. He has the keys to the prison house doors to release all of those still in the graves. He will say, come forth, and all will have their hopes answered. May the Lord add his blessing.